You're listening to the Author Stories Podcast, bringing you the story behind the stories and the storytellers.
Margaret Wise,
Terry Brooks,
Sheena Kamal,
Matthew Quick,
J.T. Ellison,
Walt D. Williams,
Brad Thor,
Corey Doctorow,
Brandon Sanderson,
Robin Mom,
Ernest Klein, Jim Butcher,
Sherilyn Harris.
Visit HankGarner.com for archives of all the shows. Today's guest is...
Thanks for joining me again for the Author Stories Podcast, where I bring you the story behind the stories and the storytellers. Today, I am really excited to have Poppy G on the show with me today. She has an amazing new novel. It's called Vanishing Falls, and I love this book, Poppy. It's you know, been one of my favorite books of the year, and I'm so excited for people to finally be able to get their hands on it today. Today's release day. Happy release day.
Thank you so much. It's very exciting for me to hear you say that you enjoyed it. It sort of still feels a little bit surreal that people are reading it.
I know what you mean. There's something about, you know, when it gets out into the world and all of the stress and anxiety kind of come to a head, you know, it's a threshold you get to cross.
Absolutely. And I feel very lucky. It's such a bucket list, once in a lifetime, amazing thing to have a book published, especially for an Australian to have their book published in America. So I'm extremely excited. I got a little thrill there when you said that you enjoyed reading it.
Well, we're going to talk all about that and you know, all the great stuff around your career. But before we do, we begin each show with the same question. And that question is, what is your first memory of wanting to be a writer or storyteller?
Oh, okay. Well, I've always loved books, as everybody who answers that question would say. But I always loved to write. And from when I could first string a sentence together, I kept a secret diary. So probably when I was, 7 or 8 years old, and I would record the presents I got for my birthday. And then that sort of evolved through the teenage angst years, and I continued writing in this secret diary until I was about 21, when I realized it was time to put that energy into doing something more substantial. But I just love writing. I find it so therapeutic, and I feel grateful for every chance to write, because we have such busy lives, and to sort of find that little hour or two in the day to just sit down quietly by yourself and write, I feel very fortunate each time that happens.
Poppy, do you remember the first book or maybe it was a series that you got into, or just an author that you loved, the first time that you felt like a book could transport you to somewhere else?
Well, it would be when I was very young. My mother loved to read to us. She read us so many books, and I think it would have to be the Enid Blyton books, the Enchanted, the Magic Faraway Tree and the Enchanted Forest. And then as I grew older, I loved her, you know, The Secret Seven and the Famous Five, all those types of mysteries. But it's funny, because I've just been reading The Magic Faraway Tree to my four-year-old, and that's the first time I've actually read him a book that's not a picture book. And I said to him, you have to close your eyes and imagine the story as I read it. And I can remember when my mum did that with me and my sisters. So I think it's such a beautiful thing just to close your eyes and have a story read to you.
Absolutely. Poppy, you spent the first part of your life in Tasmania, is that right?
Yes, that's right.
I love to think of how place affects stories and storytelling. Do you feel like that, you know, growing up in Tasmania, do you feel like that shows up in your writing? Not necessarily, you know, reporting on the place or story set there, but do you feel like there's, something about that place that kind of infects your storytelling?
Absolutely. I've written many unpublished manuscripts as well as the one that we're talking about right now, and they're all set in Tasmania. I grew up there. I I moved away when I turned 18, and when I came to the mainland to go to university. But of course, my parents are there and my sister is there, and we are a very close family. All my cousins are there. So we spend a lot of time going back there for the summer. I take my children there. But it's certainly a place I love, and I find it an intriguing place. It's a place of contrasts, that whether it's this sort of beautiful, wild, remote wilderness with vast forests and wild coastlines, and it can appear quite bleak and raw, but at the same time, it has an incredible fragile beauty. And I think as a writer, there's just so much scope for that kind of description of landscape and creating that kind of imagery. But also the people that live there, it's a very interesting demographic. And sort of growing up there, and I come from a big family, many people in my family are what we call greenies, so environmentalists, but at the same time there were parts of the family who made their living from the logging industry. And in Tasmania, that's a very volatile political situation, I guess, between these two polar opposite types of people. So sort of you see that a lot, I guess, in any place that's where it's a smaller space, but you get these sort of diverse people all bumping shoulders and living together. So I find that aspect of it intriguing, and particularly for my novel writing, it's a endless resource of inspiration.
The book Vanishing Falls, it takes place in a little town called Vanishing Falls, which is kind of in the Tasmanian rainforest. Is that a real place?
No, I made up the town so that no one in Tasmania can think that I wrote the story about them. That does course. Happen.
Is it informed by real places?
Absolutely. So there is a Vanishing Falls, which is in the southern part of the state, and you can only – I don't even know if there's a hiking track in. I think you sort of it's quite such a remote waterfall that people have been there, but it's not somewhere you can just sort of turn up and hike into. It's quite difficult to get to. And the actual town of Vanishing Falls, I did a lot of research, although having grown up there, I knew a lot about the area, but I wanted to make sure that I was very accurate in creating this little town. And so it's a fictional town, but sort of set in a rainforest that lies between what we call garrison towns. So they were little villages that were in the early 1800s, where the British were setting up, because it was a penal colony, so they were setting up their little, they might be like a jail, and that's where the soldiers lived and that sort of thing. So these are like little towns built out of sandstone, sort of like English villages. So that's kind of the inspiration for Vanishing Falls. So usually a town like that, little village, was near to a grand country estate of the pastoralists who came and acquired the land at that time, and they became very wealthy. So it was it certainly, if someone was to go to Tasmania, and in the back of the book I've referred to a couple of little towns that inspired it, you could probably go and see where I got some of my inspiration from, little towns in that area.
The book Vanishing Falls is a crime thriller, I guess, is how you would categorize it. Do you remember the first book of that nature that you read that kind of put you in touch with your darker side? You're such a lovely person to talk to, and there's such kind of horrendous stuff that happens in this book. I love to, you know, to kind of tease like that, but you know, how do you get in touch with your darker side?
Well, I think as a reader, I've always loved when you begin reading something, or you begin watching, you know, a horror movie, And that feeling as it begins, they usually describe this most beautiful scene, and it's very calm, and you know, children are playing or skipping rope on a tree-lined street, and there's pretty houses. But you know this is about to get upset. This is about to be disrupted. So I love, as a writer, trying to create that disquieting mood and creating that picture perfect, the picture perfect sort of setting while there is a darkness lurking beneath. So I think that's, you know, those, I'm almost embarrassed to admit, actually I shouldn't have said that, but the Flowers in the Attic books.
Yes.
I love those, the teenager. And so I think they do that really well. It's that sort of gothic horror that you've got these beautiful settings, but absolutely awful things are going on below the surface and everything is about to implode. So I like, I think as a reader, I find that quite exciting. So that's what I try to create in the books. I think there is, like, it's got some very dark things in there, but then there are, that's sort of counterbalanced by the beautiful, the rainforest, and there's some beautiful people, and so there are sort of the highs and lows, which you have those sort of mellow, more beautiful parts of the book, but they really serve to highlight and make darker the darkness.
Well, it really is a beautiful juxtaposition, though, that you know, you have such a beautiful place and characters that just really jump off the page. And you know, it's a lot like a Stephen King book, in that, you know, a lot of his stories are about small, quaint little towns with just regular people. And, you know, when you're a couple of chapters in, you kind of feel like you know these people, like they're people that you could walk down your town and you could point out any one of these characters. You know, and then all hell breaks loose, you know, with the, but you kind of know these people, and maybe that's why you care about them so much. The same thing sort of happens in Vanishing Falls, which I absolutely love.
Oh, thank you. That's one of the kindest things you could say to a writer. Thank you. Because I feel I know them. I feel they, I can see them. I could, you know, like you know, but like you said, a bunch of, you know, some people, you know, a bunch of friends, and you imagine if something happened, you would sort of know what all of your friends would do in that situation. For example, if the power went out, you can sort of imagine the people you know and who would do what, who would try to get the power back on, who would scream, who might do something a bit dodgy or something. I don't know. But I love, for myself as a reader, when I'm reading a book, that you can just see the characters and feel them. And so to be able to create that for a reader, for me to do that as a writer, I that would be the ultimate achievement.
Want to grow as a writer and take your writing to the next level? Give Pro Writing Aid a try. Pro Writing Aid is a grammar checker, style editor, and writing mentor in one package. Pro Writing Aid will never replace a human editor. Rather, it helps you self-edit to a deeper level so that when you send it off to an editor, they will be able to focus on the meat of your writing and not spend their time fixing basic writing issues. Pro Writing Aid is the only platform that offers world-class grammar and style checking, combined with more in-depth reports to help you strengthen your writing. Our unique combination of suggestions, articles, videos, and quizzes makes writing fun and interactive. Writing can be grammatically perfect, but still feel awkward and clumsy. Pro Writing Aid searches out elements like repetitiveness, vague wording, sentence length variation, over-dependence on adverbs, passive voice, over-complicated sentence structures, and so much more. Nothing makes a writer lose credibility faster than spelling and grammar mistakes. Submit clean, error-free writing. Go to ProWritingAid.com and use code HANK20 for 20% off of Pro Writing Aid Premium. Pro Writing Aid, check it out today. Noveler is the best way to write a novel. Why? Quite simply because we've made it the easiest place to do it. Writing a novel is hard enough. Noveler takes care of all the logistical bits of writing a novel, just leaving that small matter of the words to you. It's a clean, beautiful writing interface with writing analytics, goals and streaks, advanced grammar checking, version control, day, evening, and night modes, and many other features designed to take all the stress out of writing. Tell us what you need and we'll build it. Together, we'll build a better tool. With a design-led approach, all the right tools that you need, Noveler saves all your words constantly, allows you to manage and order your novel easily. It's accessible from any device, desktop or mobile. It syncs to Google Drive and Dropbox. It allows exports in various formats, including ebook and more. It also has nice touches like allowing you to write both offline and online, unique for a web-based platform. Everyone needs help with their writing from inspiration through to grammar checking, so we're doing our best to provide that support. We integrate that support directly into Noveler. Our advanced grammar checker powered by Pro Writing Aid does everything from spell check to style advice. Our writing courses include the incredible Tim Clare's Couch to ADK. We're really excited to offer all Author Stories listeners 30% off Noveler for a whole year. And it doesn't matter if you choose to sign up for the monthly or annual plan, you'll get 30% off. All you need to do is use the discount code Hank when you sign up. Noveler, N-O-V-L-R. That's noveler.org. Before you wrote Vanishing Falls, you published a book called Bay of Fires. Where did that book come from?
So every summer, my family had a beach house on the east coast of Tasmania, and we call it a shack because it's very much a shack. There was no electricity. Yeah, it actually used to have a long drop out the front. Do you know what a long drop is?
I don't.
So it's a toilet that is in a shed, and because there's no piped water or sewage, it's sort of over a pit. I don't know what you call it in America.
An outhouse.
Outhouse, yes.
Yes, that's what we call them here. That's amazing.
This outhouse had the world's best view because it was right on the cliff overlooking the ocean. So,
literally a long drop.
My sisters and I were always scared to go there at nighttime.
that's funny.
Yeah, that's gone now. But this old shack, we had candles or lanterns, a gas cooker. So there's no electricity. There's tank water. It was at the end of a very long, like a gravel road that most cars didn't really like to drive on. So it was very isolated. And having spent so many summers there, it's sort of a place that was deep in my heart. And it's a beautiful, beautiful area with the beautiful greeny blue ocean, white icing sugar white beaches, and then these ginormous boulders. They're granite and they're covered in a orange lichen, which is like an orange moss. So they look it's stunning. Yeah, I would encourage anyone listening, Google Bay of Fires Rocks, Tasmania, and they're quite stunning. So that then with that particular book, I just imagined if a dead person washed onto the beach, and how in such a isolated community how people would react, and how they reacted in that book is with a macabre voyeurism, which we all have been guilty of when you see something terrible on the news and you, it's like watching a train derail. It's awful, and you know it's awful, but you can't look away. So right. I sort of was playing with that.
It's kind of like American politics. You don't want to watch it, but you kind of have to.
But it's so interesting.
Right. Or at least it's a total disaster, one or the other.
Yes. Yeah.
I just googled those rocks, and they're absolutely stunning, by the way.
They really are. So it's a very inspiring place, just from the landscape alone. But then similarly to Vanishing Falls, just sort of looking at how, in a little beach community, you have so many different types of people. You have people camping there and people that have lived there forever and may resent some of the other people who've come in, who might be building bigger beach houses, or other just sort of regular people that come there to fish or swim or hike. So and they all sort of know each other well. I like that idea for a novel, that people know each other, but you don't really know each other. And that's something, in Vanishing Falls that I make the most of is that everybody, once the woman disappears, everybody has a secret. Everyone is trying to hide something. But it's how far people will go to keep those secrets of theirs hidden that sparks the tension.
Poppy, I have a kind of a weird fascination with where stories begin. And, you know, we've all heard the question, you know, where do you get your ideas from? And it's kind of a trite, worn out question. But I'm always fascinated with that first kernel of a story, where the story is born from. And for you, is it a character that comes first? Is it a setting and then the characters kind of come on the scene? Is it like a news article or something that you've read and then you imagine placing characters in a situation like that? Where does the story begin for you?
You're right. It is a kernel. And I think with Vanishing Falls, there were about 10 tiny kernels that I tried to use. Probably the character of Joelle came to me first. And
interesting.
Yeah, I've been surprised. So many readers are telling me that they love Joelle. It's cool. So I read years ago a news story of a terrible crime that happened in Australia, and there was a young girl who'd inadvertently become caught up in it, and I felt for her. And I was also thinking, you know, I was talking before about that macabre voyeurism of people watching and opinionating on these sort of news crime stories. And I, you know, this young girl in the news story, you know, when people become involved in something like that, they're tarnished forever. And so I don't know what happened to that girl, but I just imagined I wanted to write a character where something like that happened when she was sort of too young and too lacking a family or a community to sort of guide her through such a difficult time. And I just wanted to write her a happy ending. That's probably how the first few pages that I wrote emerged, from that idea of, can I write a happy ending for this girl that I'd thought of so long ago? But of course, it is a murder mystery, and things have to go terribly wrong for her before she could have her happy ending. So that was one part. But then there was sort of all these other smaller ideas that occurred to me that I wanted to weave together. So I guess that's the challenge when you sort of have, you know, you think, do I save that idea for another piece of writing, or can I try and how can I combine all these ideas? And that's what's so interesting for me as a writer, is then seeing how that what the finished product is once all these things come together and then they affect each other.
Well, I can't speak for everyone's fascination with Joelle, but for me, there's something fascinating, maybe a little exciting, about being the person that everyone underestimates. And, you know, being someone that everyone just kind of writes off as squirrely or slow or, you know, not playing with a full deck, you know, whatever other metaphors you want to think of. But knowing that there really is more going on behind the scenes, and I think a lot of people would love to be that person, and that being the person that everyone else has written off, but you really, you know what's going on, or you have more information than you're letting on. That's kind of an exciting thing when you think about it.
It is. And I think that she's what you would call an amateur sleuth. So she's not the world's best sleuth, but her strength is her charisma. Everybody likes her. She's friendly and nice and kind, and she is genuinely interested in most of the people in the village. So she finds herself getting exposed to the information that will lead to the solving of the mystery of why Celia Lilly disappeared in the middle of the night. And Joelle struggles a bit to try and piece it all together, but well, I don't want to give it away, but she, her friendships with everyone in the village. That's one of her strengths in her in how she. I don't know what to say in case I give it away, but yeah, she tries to solve the mystery with this knowledge.
Celia Rich, you mentioned her, and she's kind of her story is kind of the linchpin that the rest of this hinges on. Tell me about her. Where did she come from for you, and why did you do such heinous things to Celia Lily?
I don't even know if I like Celia Lily. I think she's a bit mean, but I don't know. I'd be interested if readers feel that. I feel like she's one of those women who is the alpha female, and she's gorgeous and she's rich and she's got a handsome husband and beautiful children. And she is also a bit of a manipulator. So she sort of, she is able to orchestrate the women of the village, and they all seem to sort of want, they, you know, they want to be standing next to her or being warmed by her light. But I think she, now I've forgotten your question.
Well, I was just asking where Celia came from, and how does she factor into what does her appearance and then subsequent disappearance, how does that kind of fire off the story?
So Celia comes home from a function, and her husband didn't attend the function with her. And when he gets home at about midnight, it's a wild, wet, rainy night. The front door of their colonial mansion is wide open with the rain pouring inside onto their antique carpets. And he finds in their living room, his wife has taken off her earrings and put them on a side table. She's poured herself a glass of champagne. She's kicked off her shoes and her coat. She is nowhere to be seen. So it doesn't look like there's an intruder. It looks like she was there alone. It's very mysterious. No one can sort of work out where what's happened to her. But suspicion falls on her husband because they had argued earlier in the evening. And so I was sort of interested in, you know, if a woman disappears and you see the husband on the television and you wonder, are they his crocodile tears? And we've actually had a few cases of that here in Australia where the lovely husband cried and begged and pleaded on TV, and then it turned out he knew exactly what had happened to his wife. And it's so creepy. So, but then at the same time, what if you were that man and you were innocent and everybody suspected you? So I was sort of exploring that side of things. And then with Celia, I think there's issues of female friendship that was sort of thinking about. A few years ago, I witnessed a group of friends. They weren't my close group of friends, but they were a group of women, and I witnessed the friendship imploding, and it was fascinating and awful. And it's made me think about how friendship, male or female, but sort of I'm looking at, well, male or female, and how friendship can be as passionate and obsessive and manipulative and even as deceitful as a romance, as a love affair. So I think I was trying to explore that as well through Celia and the women that want to be friends with her and the women she wants to be friends with, and how devastating that can be. And in the case when I watched these women in real life, their friendship sort of all falling apart, certain women chose sides, and what that did, it severed years of beautiful friendship. And I think these women, like I said, they're not my close friends, but I would imagine they were still devastated and possibly will be forever, as much as you would be as if you broke up with your partner.
And then as the story unfolds, you've set up such kind of a perfect launching point you know, for a mystery that's at its heart what it is. We want to know what happened, and there's so many twists and turns and just delicious storytelling throughout. But what does the setting that you chose to put this book in, what does that afford you as a storyteller that, say, if you'd have written a book like this with some of the same circumstances, but put it in, say, London, what did setting this book in Vanishing Falls in Tasmania, what did that afford you as a storyteller?
That's an interesting question. I think the small town aspect of it being a village in Tasmania is an advantage in that it's easy for everybody to learn or already know about each other's business, and it's easy for people to pry and meddle with each other, which might be more difficult in a larger space like London. I love the history of Tasmania, and it's not heavy-handed with the history, but there is an element of Tasmania has a very dark past, and so I sort of touch on some of those themes. There's a painting at the heart of the novel that people may or may not want to steal, and it's a colonial painting by a English artist called John Glover, who was living in Tasmania at that time. And so that drives a little bit of the plot, one of the subplots, I suppose, within the novel. I suppose you could do something like that in England if you found something similar. But with this particular setting, and I think one thing that everybody is thinking a lot about at the moment is the dispossession of land of First Nations peoples, and of the way that we've told history, and is it time to sort of, well, I guess it's constantly evolving the way that we tell history. And one interesting thing, and I hope I'm not diverting too much, but with the John Glover paintings, art critics, he paints these beautiful pastoral scenes of Tasmania, so sheep farms with gum trees and water holes and rivers, and they're quite beautiful. They're very much in an English style. But the art critics used to comment on his paintings and say that he was trying to paint Tasmania how he remembered England to be, with these open pastures, because they said that Tasmania was just dense forest across the whole of the island. And lately, the critics are changing how they are interpreting John Glover's artwork, and they say that, which is reflecting how we're telling the history, is that Tasmania was not a land of dense forest. The Aboriginal people who lived there actually did farm the land. They just did it differently to how we understand farming today. And they did have these big valleys that were cleared pastures, and they had deliberately planted like groves of shrubs which they could hide behind, so the kangaroos would hop down into these pastures and graze, and then the Aboriginal people could spear them more easily. So it was a way of farming. It's just different to how we understand it. And so when you look at a John Glover painting in that light, it makes a different type of sense. And so I find that sort of an intriguing aspect for me. And growing up in Tasmania, going to school there, we were barely taught any Aboriginal history, but we were taught that that there were no Aboriginal people living alive anymore, which now that's not accepted. Like, that wasn't actually true. So I just find it interesting, the different stories that different people tell each other, and then how that plays out in the book is between the landowner, Jack Lilly, who's the man whose wife disappears in the night, and Joelle's husband, Brian. And so you have two men who approach the Tasmanian history from opposite perspectives. And, I mean, a dispute over that, they sort of have an ongoing argument over the naming of a creek there, which is something that is actually ongoing across Australia today, the issue of the naming of things. So in the book, it was called Murdering Creek, and the farmer wants to change it to something that's a prettier name, and Joelle's husband, Brian, thinks perhaps it should stay just to remind people of the tragedy that happened there during the disposition of the land. So I think all these things, I mean, these all sounds very heavy. It's a very slender thread that is sort of weaved through the novel that I found fascinating.
Absolutely. Vanishing Falls is such an engaging read. It's so exciting. It's like I said earlier, you fall into it in the first couple of chapters, and then you just don't want to let go of these people in this place, that you feel like you really become a part of it. And, all of those little details matter in the end. Poppy, what are you working on now? If we know anything about the publishing industry, Vanishing Falls has probably been off of your desk for a while now as it goes through edits and all the things that you do to get a book ready to publish. What have you been working on lately?
I'm just putting the finishing touches on a manuscript before I show it to my agent, and it's set. Tasmania has a tiny, tiny, tiny ski industry, and I urge anyone listening who was thinking of a ski holiday, please don't book it in Tasmania, because it doesn't compare to your majestic mountains. But it was where it was half an hour from where I grew up, and we would spend every weekend skiing on this tiny little mountain, and we belonged to a ski club there. And I've set my novel in a ski club in Tasmania, and someone in the ski club is perhaps a murderer. So it's another sort of character-driven psychological mystery set in Tasmania.
Love it. I can't wait to see what comes of that. Poppy, we're going to put links to Vanishing Falls in the show notes of this episode where people can find it. It's available everywhere now in paperback and audiobook or Kindle edition, however you like to read and consume books. You can grab it in the format of your choice. If people are just discovering you and want to dig into all the great stuff that you do, where can they connect with you, Poppy?
They should go to my website, poppyg.com, and they will see some beautiful wilderness photography that I have put up there of Tasmania. And they can also find my social media handles there. I'm on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, of course.
Excellent. We'll put links to all of those in the show notes to make it easy for people to find you. Poppy, this has been so much fun talking. I love the book. We're going to send everyone to pick up their copy of it. Thank you so much for taking time to come on the show.
Thank you, Hank. It was wonderful to chat with you. I appreciate it.
Scribophile is a respectful online writing workshop and writers community. Writers of all skill levels join to improve each other's work with thoughtful critiques and by sharing their writing experiences. We're the writing group to join if you want to find beta readers, get the best feedback around, learn how to get published, and be a part of the friendliest and most successful writing workshop online. Improve your writing by receiving detailed critiques. Learn from a vast collection of free writing resources. Make lifelong friends in our busy community of writers. Writing is a solitary art, but that doesn't mean you have to be lonely. Lucky for you, there are thousands of writers on Scribophile every day, and we're a really friendly bunch. You've never seen a writing group like this one. Join Scribophile today at scribophile.community.